Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Hope you check it out when you get a chance, and don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter and my blog. You can find the blog on the homepage, or you can go to jimsblog.biz, and if you want to, we'll send you the blog Monday through Friday. The newsletter comes on Sunday by email. The blog comes by Real Simple Syndication. And if you don't have that software capability, you can get it on our website, there on the blog site, and it's free, by the way. And we don't sell it or give it away. We just link you to the people who do. Addison Wiggins is with us, ladies and gentlemen. Addison is the editorial director and the publisher of the newsletter, Daily Reckoning. He's a financial writer. He's written a number of books. He's the co-author of the book I'm holding in my hand, Empire of Debt: The Rise of an Epic Financial Crisis. He wrote with Bill Bonner. Addison, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Jim.
It's good to have you here. You know, Addison, I have a lot of I have a lot of economists that I interview on the show, and in some ways I split them into two camps. One camp wrings their hands over the national debt, and the other camp is not all that concerned about the national debt. Now, which one should we really kind of believe?
Well, I think that you should definitely be concerned about the national debt. I would definitely be in the former camp, simply because it represents a significant liability into the future, a mortgage, if you will,
yeah,
on future economic activity, and a significant event that has been happening over the last couple, 10, 15 years in the financial markets. Since the 1930s, we have said the economic doctrine of the country has been that the public debt is a public debt. We owe it to ourselves, therefore we don't have to pay it back. That has allowed presidents since Franklin Roosevelt to not be concerned with paying back the public debt at all.
Mm-hmm.
And just this past October, we passed the $8 trillion mark. But this time it's a little bit different because of the globalization of financial markets, more and more of that public debt is actually owned by foreign investors and foreign central banks, which in the markets is not necessarily a bad thing. It doesn't matter who owns the debt per se, but what it does do is it puts a significant amount of our financial decisions in the hands of people that might or might not have our interests in mind when they go to make those decisions.
Right. But don't we need to put that debt in perspective? Now, you used the word $8 trillion in debt. Do you know what the national assets are?
Well, there's two figures that people put into try to put that into perspective with. One is just the national GDP,
which is
the amount of income, effectively, that the economy produces each year. That's about $12 trillion.
Right.
And the national assets, it's really hard to put a figure on that, and people argue about all the time what it is.
The numbers I've heard is something like $60 trillion.
Yeah, well, the number we use in the book is $54 trillion, and that was just based on, I think, a government report that we
right.
found as credible as any other.
So if that were a balance sheet, if you had a company that's income was quite a bit more than its debt, and its assets, fixed assets, were maybe, what would that be, seven times its debt. I mean, that's a pretty darn good ratio, isn't it?
Well, it's a pretty good ratio.
We'd invest in that company, wouldn't we?
Well, it really depends. I mean, if you look at just to kind of, put round numbers on it, if we were to begin paying that back, let me just give you one example. The Levy Institute, which is a think tank here in Washington, they estimate that by 2008, just two short years away, the country will owe foreign investors $8 trillion. The total debt right now is $8
trillion. Right.
In 2 years, they expect that we will owe foreigners $8 trillion.
Right.
and the economy growing at 3% will roughly still be $12 trillion.
Well, part of the problem we got there is because we've got so much of the rest of the world, Japan and Europe, for example, is in the doldrums and has been now for years. They're not spending money the way we're spending money. Their economy's in the tank, basically.
Right. Well, you can make the argument that apart from our spending, ours is in the tank too. It's the public spending that kind of keeps things afloat.
Boy, you're a real wet blanket here at the holiday season, aren't you, Addison?
Yeah. Well, let me just make the point though. If we were paying that back, if for some reason, and I'll give you an example of how that might happen in a second, but if for some reason the chips that people have, when they start calling them in, 60% of the economy is 6 out of every $10 that would be produced. And that,
right.
You know, if you start looking at it that way, that is a significant portion of the economy. And that's roughly how we're trying to at least make the point that while there's a whole school of economists that have been saying for a number of years that the public debt, you know, even Dick Cheney said it last year. He's like, you know, Reagan proved that deficits don't matter. We can spend all the money we want. If we want more money, if we think we need more money, we'll just print more. And that's just the pervasive idea at the highest levels of decision making in this country.
Well, back to my balance sheet and corporate perspective analogy. One of the things we would not like about that company that I just described is the fact that apparently this company is paying interest only, not servicing the debt. Would you agree with that?
Right. That's kind of the point I was getting to, is that what is happening, and you know, if you just type debt clock into Google, you'll find a number of websites where you can actually watch the debt grow at exorbitant amounts.
That
it's about
like
$80 million an hour.
Does that site come with Valium? It sounds like we might need something.
You definitely get depressed when you start looking at those things. But it's growing by about $80 million an hour. And if you're a small businessman, or if you're just looking at your own personal balance sheets, you know what it's like to handle some debt and have it compounding negatively. And at the sums, the totals that we're talking about, it's approaching sort of a critical mass,
right,
in my opinion, and it's growing so rapidly. It's growing at such a faster pace than the economy itself. The whole idea, the economic strategy that's in place now, is that we cut taxes that will spur growth at the small business level, will spur investment at the corporate level.
Right.
And that will grow the economy, and it will grow it fast enough that we can bring those taxes in and start paying off the debt.
Right.
But they always forget to pay off the debt.
You're making the case for supply side economics, but that doesn't. But there's another important part. You got to stop spending.
Yeah, you got to stop spending.
Stand by,
you
Addison.
Start paying off the debt.
Stand by. We got to pay. We got to do some things here to pay some debts too. Got to take a quick break. It's 20 till. We'll be right back with Addison Wiggin. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our new friend, Addison Wiggin, the author, along with Bill Bonner, the two authors of the book Empire of Debt, The Rise of an Epic Financial Crisis. And Addison, I want to read a passage from the middle of your book. The title of the chapter is America's Glorious Empire of Debt. This is chapter 10. The story of international trade, circa 2005, is the most preposterous tale economists have ever heard. One nation buys things that it can't afford and doesn't need with money it doesn't have. Another sells on credit to people who already cannot pay, and then builds more factories to increase output. Is that like the preamble of this book, Addison?
Well, that's it describes what we call the system of imperial finance. First of all, just to put the empire in perspective, we've used the term loosely, really just to describe the level of influence that America and the American economy has achieved. We're the largest military, we have the largest economy, and we are the most predominant culture, the culture that has most influence around the world. And those are hallmarks of empires of the past. We don't really dominate the world in the way. Some people make the argument that we do.
But we also take the most risks too.
We do take the most risks, but empires of the past took a lot of risks as well. One phrase that we've come up with is, the Romans used to say, "We came, we saw, we conquered." We're the only empire in history that has changed it to "We came, we saw, we borrowed."
Well, the other thing I'll say, and this is a little bit more of a political statement, but I liked what Colin Powell said. He said, "This is the only country in the world that whenever it has conquered a land, it gives the land back to the people and only asks for enough real estate to bury its dead." That's a little bit of a different empire, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very different empire, and it has created some kind of interesting paradoxes. One of them is, overtly right now we have a war going on in Iraq, and in order to do that, just as you pointed out with the passage you read, we have to borrow from, and we've invaded Iraq. Make the world safe for democracy, which is Wilson's term that was justification for going into World War One, and it became part of the political fabric of the country, and now this is the justification that the Bush administration has used for going into Iraq. And yet one of our largest purchases of our debt, the creditors that we use, is Communist China. It's an odd paradox of the way things are working right now.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask that. I understand that we owe China $1 trillion.
That is correct.
Here's my question. For arguably the most potentially dangerous country in the world, Communist China, can it be a bad thing to owe them a lot of money? I mean, to me, why would they attack us if they won't get their money back?
Well, in history there have been many cases where a country gets itself into debt, and then there's a phrase we use that people in debt who can't pay don't pay their debts, but those debts don't go away.
Right.
And that has often led to political violence. One country that we look at is a buildup of debt in Italy in the 20s. Which they sort of ran the debt clock up to a point where they just couldn't pay anymore, and what it gave rise to was fascism.
Right.
We try to outline how that happened in that country, and we're not suggesting that that's going to happen in America, but just that sometimes the wheels do come off, and it doesn't look too good.
Well,
you make a good point that China, right now, they have a very a cozy relationship with the American consumer. First of all, Asian central banks, if you take all of the financing that they've done, they've used the U.S. dollar as their reserve currency,
mm-hmm.
and now they own more U.S. debt in aggregate than the U.S. government does itself. And this just puts tension on the system. It's healthy for them now because they're using Western capital to build out their infrastructures. I was in China last year, and I toured the Forbidden Palace. And the tour itself, the brochures that guided you around the tour, were sponsored by Nestle.
Right.
And when you go into the rooms, I went into the concubine room where the plaque on the wall explained what the room was for and everything, and that had a little American Express emblem on it.
Let me stop
you
for a second.
They have a cozy relationship with Western capital, and right now there's no threat to that. But
let
in
me,
the last
let me
six
stop you.
Months...
Let me stop you for
That's
a second.
Okay.
We only got about a minute left. We're going to get you back on because we got a lot more to talk about. But I want to come back to this supply side issue. Would you agree with me that America doesn't have a revenue problem? It has a spending problem.
I would definitely agree with that, and I have a meeting set up with Steve Forbes next week because I support the whole flat tax idea.
Exactly.
I think we ought to be getting rid of the IRS
Steve is a friend of ours. He's on the show.
That's
excellent. In fact, he'll be on the show next Friday.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so you can tell him we spoke, and we're looking forward to seeing him on the show. But yeah, no, I think the flat tax is the way. But the point is, I'm saying here is we don't need to be raising taxes. We need to be electing people to Congress who will say, we're not going to spend for that because we don't have the money.
That's exactly right. If you're going to cut taxes, you got to cut spending, and you got to cut spending faster than taxes.
Will you come back another day, Addison?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Get you back. Thanks a lot, and happy holidays.
Yeah, you too.
Addison Wiggins, ladies and gentlemen, the co-author of Empire of Debt, available wherever books are sold. Addison, is there a website? Is he still there? I'll get you that website, folks. Empire of Debt, wherever books are sold. Quick break. Right back with Russell Brown after these messages.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.